Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia? Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
But the nuclear plants were built in haste, with too many risks and no place for waste. And so from Seabrook to Shoreham Town, we have to shut those new plants down. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Now we're fighting.
Yeah, we're fighting wars over oil and gas. This is the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Harvey Wasserman with you for another hour in Solartopia. We are trying to reach our guests from Smart Aleck down in Matthew, set up a organization to fight the Koch brothers' evil ways with their American legislative, I think it's Exchange Council or whatever the hell it is. They are a mean group, and this guy Nancy is going to talk all about fighting them. But I am at the second half of the show. We are going to talk with two people, very angry people, from about Diablo Canyon. A deal has been cut that is not cool. And we're going to talk to you all about that as soon as. We get through our first half hour with Matthew here. We're trying to track him down. So let me see if we can find this guy here. No, he has not called in. I'll just wing it for a half hour here. And I have an email for him, but I don't have his contact. So we'll look where we are, and we're going to talk about a few things here. First of all, Diablo Canyon, on our last show, we had a go-around here about the alleged shutdown of Diablo Canyon, the big nuclear plant in California, which is on 12 earthquake faults, surrounded by 12 earthquake faults. I was arrested there in 1984, and a deal has been cut, which was made worldwide news about getting to shut it down. And what's happened is that the two major environmental groups, the Natural Resources Defense Council and the Friends of the Earth, cut a deal with Pacific Gas and Electric, which owns Diablo Canyon, to get it shut down within a very short period of time. Well, actually, not a short enough period of time, let's put it that way, 9 years. And I have a number for this guy. Try 404-983-6049. 404-983-6049 there in the studio. as for Matthew. So I'm going to be talking about the Apple Canyon. 404-983-6049. So I think what happened is Matthew got his time zone probably screwed up. And we'll just, if he doesn't make it, then he's not such a smart aleck. Let's put it that way. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about Diablo Canyon. Let's talk about the future of nuclear power. And if you want to call in, it's 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We're glad to have you call in. We have a guest that didn't show up, so you're going to listen to me for a half hour. If you want to have a dialogue with me, that'd be great. I look forward to that. So let's talk about what's happened at Diablo Canyon, and we will have Linda Seeley and Myra Reese join us at the half hour. So here's the story. Sorry, this is karma, folks, because I actually missed – I never miss a radio interview, never. But I missed one for no good reason on Monday. Scott, my buddy, and – Connecticut probably had to sit there and fill in for me, and I felt miserable about that. And I said, "Oh no, I know there's going to be karma come back at me right away." And this is what happened. So here we are, a half hour without a guest. And yeah, you know, we'll live with it. It'll be good. So call me if you like. 61. So it's 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now is your chance to get on the air with me at PRN and the Solartopia show. So at any rate, Diablo Canyon has been operating since the 1980s. It was designed in the 1960s. Most of the nuclear power plants in this country are vintage 1960 designs. Ask yourselves how many of you are designing or are driving a car from the 1960s. It's just ridiculous. So when Diablo was built, they claimed that they didn't know about the earthquake faults that were built, that were surrounding the plant. There was one that was discovered towards the end of construction, but none of the plants that would be none of the nuclear power plants at Diablo Canyon, the two of them, were at all designed to withstand the earthquakes. So just before Diablo went online, they did discover one that they made public. They'd known about it for a long time. It was found first by Shell Oil. It's called the Hosgri Fault, H-O-S-G-R-I. And it's within 3 miles of Diablo Canyon. Now, you got to understand, Diablo Canyon is two huge atomic reactors. I mean, these things are really big. Even Bernie Sanders would have trouble getting his arms around how big they are. You can't really see them too well from the beach. They are back off of the beach, but we did get in there in 1984. I was arrested with several hundred other people. Spent three lovely nights in the San Luis Obispo County Jail. And then we continue. Then they opened them. Actually, they what happened at the end of the first round of protests at Diablo Canyon was they were just about to go online. They had spent all these billions of dollars and told the world how wonderful these nuclear power plants were. And when you know, just as they were about to go online, and we delayed them. By the way, our protest cost them a ton of money and made them not get operating on time. And just as they were about to open these two ridiculous reactors, it became known that they had installed major pieces of the apparatus backwards. They had misread. This is, you know, how do you make this up? The company that had spent all these billions of dollars building these two atomic power plants misread their own blueprints and had installed major pieces of equipment in these reactors absolutely wrong. It was an unbelievable turn of events. And I have to say that had we not been demonstrating there, had more than 10,000 people not showed up to oppose non-violently, of course, the Diablo Canyon nuclear plants. It's not likely that they would have found these huge defects in the in the installation of these two reactors. So they did go online in the mid-1980s. They were licensed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And I have to tell you that one of the things that went on, and this is so typical of the nuclear power industry, is these two plants were under construction since the 1960s. And when Pacific Gas and Electric, which was building them, first set out to construct these reactors, they had to get leases from the state of California for certain coastal areas that they were going to use to install their cooling system. So the company went to the state and got these leases, and the state agency that's in charge of this is the State Lands Commission. It has three members, the lieutenant governor, the state controller, and the state's chief financial officer. And so they went to the government of California, to the State Lands Commission, and they got two leases for the use of land for the cooling systems at Diablo Canyon. That was in 68 and 69 or 69 and 70. Later in the year, in 1970, the legislature passed what's called the California Environmental Quality Act. The California Environmental Quality Act requires environmental impact reviews for major leases. In other words, if you're going to build a giant facility like Diablo Canyon, and you're going to use or impact state land, the California Environmental Quality Act says that you have to do environmental impact reviews. You got to go in there and study the impact of your technology on the land. Yes.
Hello.
Hello. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Matthew Charles Cardinale.
What's that?
Oh, my God. Yes, hello.
Are you Matt?
Yes. Yes.
Well, my love, thanks for you to call. I'm just in the middle of explaining what's happening with Diablo Canyon. So we're happy to have your call, Matt. I'll continue talking about Diablo Canyon when we're done talking with you. So, Matt, tell us about yourself. You are with Smart Aleck. And, folks, if you've been listening to my brilliant monologue here on Diablo Canyon, it will resume at the half hour because I'm going to be joined by Milo Reeson and Linda Seeley from California. We're going to talk about the recent developments at Diablo Canyon, which are not happy and not good. And I will continue. I'll complete the discussion of Diablo Canyon. But, Matt, tell us about your organization.
Thank you for so much for having me on the program. I co-founded a new organization called Smart Aleck, and that's at smartaleck.org on the Internet, and that stands for State and Municipal Action for Results Today and Agenda for Legislative Empowerment and Collaboration. And we are a progressive education, advocacy, capacity building, and lobbying organization that is working to develop affordable housing and environmental model bills for replication in state, county, and local governments. And it's a bit of a double entendre because not only are we, a bunch of smart alecks, but it is a smart response to ALEC, which is the American Legislative Exchange Council that has kind of had a strong presence in Republican state legislatures and gotten a lot of regressive and harmful bills through over the last few years. And we decided that it was time to involve ordinary people, low-income people in that process. And, we need to also be coming up with model bills.
Well, listen, I'm really glad you called because it's a very important thing you're doing. Now, I have read Dark Money, the book by Jane Meyer on the Koch brothers. And the Koch brothers,
yes,
the third and fourth richest guys in the country, these evildoers who seem to come straight from Satan, frankly, started an organization in 1973 called the American Legislative Exchange Council. And function has been to promote every anti-human, anti-environment
piece of legislation that the devil could ever imagine. And, of course, they become very powerful because the Koch brothers have unlimited money to spend. So now you have
millions.
Yes, tens of millions. Now you have come along and you have started a counter organization. When did you do this?
Well, we incorporated in March of this year, and we did our official launch about a month ago after, you know, forming our board of directors and bylaws and everything. And we do have our first model bill that I had actually written as a law student, that was adopted in Atlanta in November of last year, for affordable housing impact statements. And when I noted that in just a period of a few months, it was picked up, for pending adoption in, several cities, including Pittsburgh, New Orleans, Albany, and Los Angeles, I was like, well, this is kind of like a progressive ALEC. And would it be funny if we called it Smart ALEC? And so that's kind of how that came about. But, you know, you used some adjectives to describe the type of legislation that ALEC pursues. Certainly no regulation, low taxes is some of their big themes. But examples that your listeners might pick up on, you know, are voter ID, privatization of education, privatization of prisons, drug testing of welfare recipients, and certainly stand your ground laws, which, you know, were very important in the Trayvon Martin case.
Well, tell us the detail of the piece of legislation. It sounded interesting, the piece of legislation that you proposed that inspired you to do this about housing, affordable housing.
Yeah. So I had such success with this model bill that I wrote. It's called Affordable Housing Impact Statements. And very simply, it requires that a government prepare an impact statement that would describe the impact that any decision that they would make would have on the affordable housing stock in that jurisdiction. And in basically every major U.S. city, we have a shortage of housing for families making $15,000 a year and less. So we have an unmet housing need in just about every jurisdiction at a specified income bracket that can be quantified. And this is a tool for jurisdictions to keep track of how every decision they make is getting us closer to or further away from meeting that unmet need. And people, I think, and ALEC would love this, you know, but people don't tend to think about housing as a public policy issue. They tend to think of it as a private struggle that they should have in the privacy of their own homes, and as a private market issue. But it's really a public policy issue. And in fact, we've seen mass demolitions of public housing, mass demolitions of affordable multifamily in big cities, and all of that has been a policy choice. Anytime you see in a big city notice of proposed land use change, and that's a, you know, they're about to tear down something affordable and put in some, you know, market rate condos, maybe with a Trader Joe's and a frozen yogurt stand or something. And that's just one example. That's a negative kind of impact. But there's positive things that jurisdictions are trying to do right now, too. Tiny houses and community land trusts and inclusionary zoning and the R word, rent control. So all these things that people are doing, and some are more effective than others. But let's understand the estimated impact of anything that we're trying to do, because at the end of the day, we have people who are either homeless or paying much more than they should for housing, and that is really a human rights crisis.
Well, it sounds very admirable. And did the Koch brothers come out? Excuse me? Okay. We're joined by Linda Seeley out in California. Linda Seeley, just say hi to us. Talking with
Hi, Harvey. Florida. Hi. Sorry, hey, I thought I was supposed to call in at 2:30.
Yes, you were. I had you call in early because Matt wasn't on, but Matt has joined us. You're welcome to listen in till the half hour. Or you can hang up and call us back. It's a very interesting discussion here. Matt has started an organization called Smart ALEC to counteract the horrible indescribably evil, incredibly destructive Koch brothers who, they must be, I think they're actually aliens who were sent here to destroy our planet and make it, you know, available to another race of beings. That's the only way I can describe these guys. So Smart Aleck has come around and, is trying to, do the opposite. Now, Matt, this, housing impact statement, has it been put into law? I mean, how do you proceed with it?
Yes. And so my model ordinance actually built upon, practices from San Diego, California, and Austin, Texas, where they had, had this impact statement policy for some time, but I found in my research that the questions were largely open-ended, and I wanted to focus on those numbers of units added and subtracted at the different income brackets. And so I added that kind of scorecard to the model bill, and it was adopted in Atlanta, Georgia, November of last year. It actually goes into effect July 1st. So that will be,
wow.
You know, right now, that's tomorrow. So it's a big day. And it's pending now in four cities. I actually just flew out to New Orleans last week. Dr. DeWanda Farmer, who's also on our board of directors, flew out. We met with the mayor's office and basically the entire planning department, because they are excited about using this as a tool to keep track of how they are going to meet their goal of 5,000 new affordable housing units by 2021 kind of try to keep, you know, people in New Orleans, you know, despite Hurricane Katrina, and maybe even some people can come back. And so, yeah, there's been, you know, many jurisdictions to show interest. The city of Portland, Oregon has already partially implemented this administratively, which is to say they haven't adopted an ordinance to require it, but if they're already doing it voluntarily, some of what's called for in the policy. So, you know, it's a great thing because environmental and affordable housing challenges are so urgent that I believe it's appropriate to come up with these model bills that can be quickly replicated. Because our problems are so urgent that we can't just keep experimenting forever. And when there's things that work, Aleck has found that legislative aides and policy analysts across the country are often quite happy to let, a think tank put ideas into an actionable form for them. Because, of course, they're overwhelmed, too. With these budget crises and everything. So I don't think it's bad to do model bills. I just think they need to be good bills, and they need to be, and the bills need to come about in a way that's transparent and really participatory. And that's what we have in our bylaws. We have a requirement for the participation of low-income people on our board, that actually one-third of our board must be low-income people. So this is really the exact opposite of kind of the backroom lobbying that comes from corporations.
Well, actually, you know, that's very, very interesting, because Aleck, the dumb Aleck, the bad Aleck that was started in the 1970s by the Koch brothers, is a totally corporate run thing, and they do everything for the benefit of the corporations, and they do, as you say, draft legislation that then, you know, the lazy aides and congresspeople and all those guys just put into effect without even reading. So what we'd
right.
like you to do, Matt, is, now that you're on the case, is we'd like you to draw up legislation that would mandate all the cities in the country to go to 100% renewable energy. How about doing
okay. We'll put that before the board of directors, and we'll work with you on that. You know, I think we should at least start with all the city and county property, you know, all the city halls, all the airports, all the surplus property, because that we can control. So,
yes. And now I've got another one for you. And this, I'm dead serious about this, and I really like, I assume you have lawyers on your board or lawyers on your staff. Do you have a staff? How big is your staff?
We don't have, well, we don't really have any staff. I mean, I'm the CEO, and I don't get paid, so that's it. And then then we have a board of directors.
Wow. All right, so here's something you can do that will have an immediate impact. In the Northwest, in the state of Washington, there's the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, and they had 5 nuclear plants up there, and they went bankrupt. There's the largest municipal bankruptcy in the history of the country. It was called the Washington Public Power System. And just to be whatever they are, they left one of them running. Whoops, number 2, Washington Public Power Supply System number 2. And they've renamed it the Columbia Generating Station, so it's no longer Whoops. But we call it Whoops 2. Now, Whoops 2 is losing a ton of money. I mean, millions of dollars, and there has just been a really great op-ed, which I posted. You need to go to nukefree.org, nukefree.org, and look up for Rob McCullough's op-ed about the Whoops, remaining Whoops reactor, Whoops 2, right? Now, the bottom line is that Whoops 2 is owned by a bunch of municipals. It's really hard to figure out who owns the municipals. What we need is draft legislation that these municipal power communities can pass that will get them out of owning Whoops 2 and force it to shut down. Because every municipal power and there's your aside, because every municipal power district in the Northwest that signed on to Whoops 2 is paying way more money than they should if they did not own Whoops 2, because electricity from other sources is so much cheaper. So
we'll be in touch. We'll be in touch. It sounds like you want a position on our advisory board.
Well, whatever. But here's the key. What we need now in the Northwest is for one. All it will take is one of the public utility districts to file a lawsuit. Based on, they had a contract that was signed in the 1970s that got them ownership in these Whoops reactors when there were 5 of them.
Okay.
And that contract, I haven't read it, and if I did, I wouldn't know what it said. But my understanding is, and Robert McCullough, who wrote the op-ed that is posted at nukefree.org, he knows all about this. My understanding is that the original contract set out certain conditions that the nuke has to meet as part of their deal to be owned by these municipal utilities. And
maybe there's some breach of contract or something that would allow them to get out.
Absolutely. So every one of the public utility districts in the Northwest is being screwed by Whoops 2 because they're charging them so much more money than they could need to pay for the electricity from other sources, most importantly renewable, because the Northwest has a ton of wind and hydro. So if you're smart, Alec, you could get a victory here and make the Koch brothers flip, because you know anything that destroys the planet they seem to like, and we're already
in battle with the Koch brothers, as a matter of fact. I don't know whether you caught wind of this, but we already received a cease and desist letter from Alec, and they wish for us to cease and desist from existing, and they claim that we are infringing on their trademark on Alec by being Smart Alec. And so our deadline to respond,
I would love to write the response to that one.
We responded with roses. We had yellow roses delivered to their D.C. attorneys, and you know they spent more money on that letter, I'm sure, than we even have. You know, we've got $1,800 in a GoFundMe, and that was probably a $5,000 letter. And so we're not ceasing, we're not desisting, and the bottom line is they don't want. They don't want us to empower ordinary citizens to take back, you know, democracy in the state legislatures where they've had this monopoly, you know, for all these years by, you know, coming in with their Goliath resources and then kind of disenchanting everybody so that they just threw their hands up. But they thought we were going to cease and desist, and we were just so thankful to hear from them, and you know, we were just really delighted to know that we were in their thoughts and prayers.
Well, that's great. So listen, Linda Seeley, are you still with us? Linda?
I'm sorry?
Are you there?
Yes.
Linda?
Hi, Harvey. Hi, I had you on mute.
Oh, okay. So this is Matt. Matt has a group. You've been listening. So Matt has this group, Smart Aleck. Matt, if you want to stay with us, you're welcome, because we have another state issue to discuss. If you have to leave, give us your website. Otherwise, we'll be, you know, if you want to stay on and listen to this horror story that we're about to hear from Linda Seeley about California, it's right up your alley. So you went.
Oh my goodness! I will. I'll be listening to the recording. I kind of need to. I'm standing here under a shelter in the rain, so I would like to wrap it up. But if people could come to our website, though, which is smartaleck.org, so smartaleck.org, sign up for our constant contact email, and you can also sign up for our Facebook, and that's a great way to stay in touch with us. And,
all right, Dan,
and thank you so much. I have to go. Thank you.
All right, you send me an email, and I'll write you back about the Northwest there. Okay, Linda Seeley, you're with us from San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, I am. Hi, Harvey.
How are you? And I don't know if Myla has joined us yet.
I'm here. Can you hear me,
Myla,
Harvey?
You're here. Myla Reason, yes, both of you. So,
Myla.
Hi, Linda. Hi, Harvey.
Okay, so last week we had a celebratory talk about the deal that was cut to shut the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. And we... Hello? Is that me?
I'm not sure where that noise is coming from, but I've got the handset to my ear and mouth. Hello?
Hi, Myla. I think Harvey got dropped.
Yeah. Hi, Linda. I wonder if I should call back.
No, I'm here. That was me.
Oh,
so,
okay.
We're back.
Okay.
So that was PG&E interfering with our line here.
Uh-oh.
So
just
in
like
between our celebration of the deal that was cut to shut Diablo and now something has happened. So, Linda, you were at the Morro Bay presentation of the California Lands Commission fiasco. So tell us what happened.
Well, it was really amazing, Harvey. We had a great turnout for the meeting. People were very well prepared. Bringing up the purpose of the meeting was because the State Lands Commission has a lease on the land, on the tidelands at Diablo Canyon. That PG&E, they granted to PG&E, the old lease was from 2 leases, 68 and 69, which were due to end in 18 and 19, 49-year leases. They were in 69 and 70. They were 49-year leases. And the State Lands Commission was voting on whether to renew these leases. The crux of the issue during the meeting was whether or not the State Lands Commission was allowed or should renew those leases without ordering an EIR, or Environmental Impact Report, and a CEQA process on them, California Environmental Quality Act process. We went into the meeting fully expecting that they would do their duty, the State Lands Commission. The State Lands Commission is made up of three people. One is Gavin Newsom, who is our Lieutenant Governor, Betty Yee, who is the State Controller, and Michael Cohen, who is the finance director of the state. By the way, Michael Cohen was not at the meeting. He sent someone in his place, in his stead. So the members of the public, expected the State Lands Commission to order an environmental impact report for continuing to operate Diablo Canyon for another 9 years, as is what in the deal that PG&E made with Natural Resource Defense Council, Friends of the Earth, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, and several other groups. Under the terms of the shutdown of Diablo Canyon, which is called the Joint Agreement, PG&E has said that it's going to shut down Diablo Canyon at the end of the current license, which is in 2025. An impediment to this continued operation of Diablo Canyon was the granting of this license for the lands, the lease for the lands. So, given that there has never, ever, ever been any kind of environmental review on the environmental impacts of operating a nuclear power plant on the edge of the ocean on 13 earthquake faults, we fully expected the State Lands Commission to say, of course we'll do an environmental impact, or we'll order that the EIR be done, because this is something we really need to look at. It has nothing to do with the deal that was made between PG&E and the State Lands Commission. They could order an EIR and still, I mean, not PG&E, PG&E and the other groups, they could order an EIR and they could continue to follow through with that plan to shut down Diablo, but we'd have a lot more information than we have now. Instead of ordering that EIR, the State Lands Commission decided to extend the lease another 9 years at Diablo Canyon, which means that it's another 9 years of, you know, toxic nuclear waste that'll be building up. It's another 9 years of the once-through cooling, which kills billions of fish every single year. It's another 9 years of the biggest desalination plant on the West Coast being operated every day and dumping toxic chemicals into the ocean. And the fact that they gave this thing a pass, one of the biggest concerns that I have, not as a representative of Mothers for Peace, but as a citizen of California and a dedicated environmental champion, is that this precedent of allowing PG&E to not do an EIR for operating a nuclear power plant will set a precedent for other developments in California that call for an EIR. What will happen is that these other proposed developments in California, they'll be able to cite this decision of the State Lands Commission and say, look, a nuclear power plant didn't have to get an EIR. Why should a 500 home development have to get an EIR? We do a lot less damage to the environment than a nuclear power plant. So that's one of the most egregious violations of the law that the State Lands Commission committed the other day. Mothers for Peace is, you know, absolutely dumbstruck that they could have made such a decision. It's not going to stop us from pursuing our own goals. That plant is like a, you know, an old car that's been running way too long. And the problem with it is that as it nears the end of its life, there's going to be a lot of the workers who know that the plant is going to go down, and so they're going to be searching for other jobs. The workforce is going to be less educated than it is right now, less finessed, and believe me, it's such a complex operation to run a nuclear power plant that there is a lot of institutional knowledge that's carried by the workers there who have been there a long time, who know what they're doing, who know the shortcuts and the codes and all that stuff. And it's hard to train. It takes a long time to train a new nuclear worker. So that's very, very distressing to us. And then there's this whole thing about, it's a concept that's well documented about nuclear power plants. It's called running to failure, where with these old nukes, what the utilities do is they just run them, It's like running your old car till the gaskets blow. You know, you just run it down till it doesn't work anymore. And we don't like the idea of that, especially the fact because it is built on 13 earthquake faults. So I'll stop there and let my...
Myra Reason, do you want to jump in and say anything in addition to Linda about the what's happening
here? I would love to jump in and first of all say... we owe so much to Mothers for Peace, who are legal interveners and have been working on this issue for decades, and somehow they were not consulted when this heralded deal came down that supposed environmentalists were involved with, and yet the Mothers for Peace were not parties to this deal. So, I mean, that's really shocking to me. But, I want to step back and talk about the authority that the feds have versus the authority that the states have. You know, it's very hard under the state of California to wield any authority whatsoever over this horrible nuclear enterprise that the federal government oversees the so-called safety, which I think of more as danger than safety, of all of the commercial reactors in the country. And unfortunately, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission is not fulfilling its statutory mandate to ensure protection of public health and safety by virtue of their inspection and licensing program. You know, the resident inspector from the NRC, Dr. Michael Peck, you well know, Harvey and Linda, you've already talked about him.
He is the resident inspector who warned that there was no study done to show that Diablo Canyon could withstand a major earthquake.
And right, first, you know, it's my understanding that when the...
And then the NRC shipped him off to Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Right. It's my understanding that when the shoreline fault was mapped, which is very, very close to the intake for the water that cools the reactors, when that was mapped, that Dr. Michael Peck went ahead and looked at the license and said, oh, lo and behold, he did not believe that the plant was engineered to withstand the kind of ground motion that might occur. And it's my understanding that he counseled that the most prudent and conservative course of action at that point in time would be to shut the plant until PG&E could demonstrate that the plant could actually withstand the kind of ground motion that could occur there. And you know, we know that as the longer these reactors run towards failure, that reactor vessels become increasingly embrittled. And we know that California is due for a big quake. And just the outside chance that Dr. Michael Peck just might have been right would lead a prudent and conservative steward of the state of California to take that very seriously. And for a California land commissioner who we would hope is looking out for the best interests of Californians to act prudently and conservatively, that that person would use their authority at the very least to follow the law and require an environmental impact report prior to extending the lease of land which is owned by the people of California and administered by the State Land Commission. I am just so outraged that this extraordinarily reckless and unexplicable, as far as I'm concerned, it's just I'm just reeling over the way that the land commissioners voted, and the arrogance with which they pronounced their decision. It's just mind-boggling to me.
It is staggering, and let me summarize here what's happened. A deal was allegedly cut, apparently cut, between two environmental groups, well, three actually, one California-based, the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, and Friends of the Earth and NRDC, national groups, with the union that represents the workers at Diablo Canyon and the company Pacific Gas and Electric, saying that PG&E would not go ahead and try and get their license renewed at Diablo Canyon, which means that the two reactors would shut in 2024 and 2025. However, along the way, last Tuesday, everybody knew there would be a meeting of the California Lands Commission, which is charged with dealing with the leases that the Diablo Canyon needs to operate. And embedded in the law around these leases is a requirement dating to 1970, for God's sakes, a law signed by Ronald Reagan, requiring environmental impact reviews on the impact of whatever the leasee is doing to the land that they're leasing from the state of California. And PG&E went in to the California Lands Commission and asked for an exemption on these two leases so that they would not have to do the environmental impact regulations, presumably on the argument that, hey, we're going to shut down anyway, why make us go through all these hoops, which is utterly outrageous. These two giant reactors are supposed to operate another 9 years under this deal, and they can't do basic environmental impact reviews. 9 years is a long time. And so, everybody that I talked to, from John Giesman, the A4NR attorney, everybody assumed that the state agency, the California Lands Commission, was going to do what's obviously required by law and get these environmental impact reviews done. And instead, at the end of a full day of testimony, which I did not hear, and I'll ask Linda, you guys, at least Linda, you were at Morro Bay and heard this, and you can tell us what was done, what was said. But at the end of the day, the three commissioners, well, the two and the representative of the third, came out and said, no, we don't really think that that PG&E needs to do these environmental impact reviews. They can go ahead and operate another 9 years, and we won't know anything about what's going on, but they're good guys, I guess, and we're going to let them move ahead. Is that a reasonable explanation?
Harvey, can I just jump in and just correct the record to the extent that, I have the legal letter that was sent from the attorneys for Friends of the Earth and the director of Friends for the Earth, and they both urge the California State Land Commission to expeditiously extend the lease without any further delay.
So we have a letter from Friends of the Earth.
Two letters.
And
one
NRDC
from the
asking the California Lands Commission to not require the
AERs. Right. Well,
is that correct?
Pretty much. I mean, if you read between the lines, basically it's not the NRDC. I haven't seen what the NRDC submitted, so I can't speak for them. But I can tell you that the attorneys representing Friends of the Earth said in their, they said that Friends of the Earth supports PG&E's land request and requests that the commission approve the new lease as expeditiously as possible. And they say nothing about making sure that they submit an environmental impact report prior to renewing the lease or extending the lease.
So David Brown must be flipping in his grave about that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, all of the parties said the same thing, except for the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. They said that they requested what's called a discretionary EIR, but then they also agreed in this joint proposal, they agreed that they would not sue. They would not pursue if the State Lands Commission decided not to do an EIR, that they would drop the matter. So they're out of the picture. But people are suing, by the way. Groups are suing.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, I know of two groups for sure who are going to sue. The State Lands Commission, Mother's for Pieces, has not made any kind. We have not made a statement yet about what our path is going to be. This is not Mothers for Peace, but I do know of two other groups who are going to sue the State Lands Commission because they feel that it was an absolutely intolerable breach of the State Lands Commission duty. They have a fiduciary duty to the people who own that land. You and I and the rest of the public owns that land there, and they failed their duty for the of public trust. We'll see what happens. I don't know what'll happen with this, but I know that the story is not yet over. That's all I know, Harvey.
And
what were
Harvey,
the hearings like? You were in Morro Bay, and the hearing, there was a room in Sacramento. How many people were at the hearing in Morro Bay?
There were probably about 250.
Wow, 250 Bay. People?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how were they divided in terms of pro or anti Diablo?
There were, I'd say there were about approaching 100 pro Diablo people. They were mostly workers, I think, from Diablo Canyon, who are, of course, worried about losing their jobs, and they want to keep Diablo Canyon open until time ends, you know, because it's their life, it's their livelihoods. And they believe in nuclear power, and, you know, that's why we've got chocolate and vanilla, right? You're allowed to believe what you want to believe.
Right.
But there were, a majority of the people there were urging the commissioners to order an EIR. I mean, it's very simple. Just do what you're supposed to do, commissioners. And I want people to get the link to the meeting, and I want to give you that. I want to give you that right now. It's cal-span, cal-span, like Nancy, .org, and the. You can go to click on the California Lands Commission meeting June 28th, and you can watch the entire thing. And the thing I would suggest that people do is push your browser ahead to the very end of the meeting so that you can watch Gavin Newsom and Betty Yee summarize what they heard during the day and make their comments and give their rationales for not ordering an EIR. I hope Saturday Night Live gets a hold of these things because they're absolutely stunning in the lack of clarity and their reasoning is beyond the pale to be able to excuse a project as huge as a nuclear power plant from an environmental review. How you get around that, how you worm your way out of that is really, really over the top. So please, everybody, go look at that
And well, along those lines, can I say that last night I transcribed the closing remarks of Betty Yee, and those are posted at Harvey's website, solartopia.org.
Yes, and I'll link to them at newcree.org. I want to commend you both on your remarkable restraint. This is a family show. I don't think I'm basically at the edge here. I mean, it's completely outrageous what these people have done. I mean, right. to not require from a plant that was designed in the 1960s and is now 30 years old, a basic environmental review built around a law signed by Ronald Reagan in 1970, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, it's just staggeringly corrupt. And mm-hmm. I hope to God that Gavin Newsom's run for the governor is completely sabotaged by this. And whatever mm-hmm. Betty Yee kind of career she thinks she's going to have in the future, you know, to heck with that. Linda, your website is Mothers for Peace, is that right?
Mothersforpeace.org, uh-huh.
And I assume that all the relevant information is going to be posted there. And Myla, you work yep. with me at solartopia.org, and I also do nukefree.org.
I have one question for Linda. Is there still an opportunity for people to comment or lobby?
No,
it's over.
It's a done deal. They gave the lease on Tuesday. Right. It's over.
This phase
is over. Linda, how do you feel right now, and how does the Mothers for Peace feel right now about NRDC and Friends of the Earth and their role in this?
I think they had very good intentions. I think that they were, what's that right, a word, hornswoggled? Is that a word?
That's a word.
Yeah.
We're going to have to leave it at that.
And let me just say, Harvey, that when I was
we're going to have to keep that for another show.
All right. Thanks, Harvey.
Okay, we'll have you back. Unbelievable. Thank you, everybody. Thanks to the crew in New York. We'll see you next week, and we'll talk about this some more.
Don't you know we're going to have a solartopia.
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. All over God's green world.
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia.
The nuclear plants were built in haste, with too many risks and no place for waste. And so from Seabrook to Shoreham Town, we have to shut those new plants down. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green.
We're fighting wars over oil and gas. No matter who wins, it will not last. The earth is scarred, the planet is warming. Don't you think that all of it's a great big warning?
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God.